Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the WTI podcast with Alex
and Michael.
And we just came out of the theater and we saw Gringo.
Yep, Gringo.
The rated R action comedy thriller directed by Nash Edgerton, who we presume is related to the star or one of the stars of the movie, Joel Edgerton,
who also plays the male lead and Red Sparrow, by the way.
Yep. And then the writers, there is the story. The story was by Matthew Stone, who I'm not really familiar with.
Nope, never.
And then the co-writer is Anthony
Tambakis,
and I'm more familiar with. Just in regards to the film Warrior, which came out in 2011, that starred Joel Edgerton as well. And, you know, that was really thrilling.
Really? Was it any good?
Yeah, it was a fight thriller between Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. They were brothers, and they ended up fighting each other. It was more like a UFC-type movie.
Oh, so was it like MMA or...?
Yeah, it was sort of like that. It was like a big tournament where they would just fight basically all night. And whoever, you know, made it to the end, it was a big tournament.
Did one of them play like a Scottish or Irish character? Okay, then maybe I've seen a couple of scenes of that from TV.
You probably have.
I probably have, because that does seem to ring a bell to me. But anyway, we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about Gringo.
Okay. Well, if you compare Warrior with Gringo, it would be something analogous to stale bread.
Stale bread? You would really compare that to stale bread?
At least this movie.
Well, we should give everyone the synopsis of Gringo because it's been, you know, released recently, right?
Okay, so the synopsis, Gringo, should we say. It stars David
We'll just call him David O, because his last name is difficult to pronounce, sorry.
Okay.
But
David O portrays a man named Harold, who is employed under a big company, who the boss is Joel Edgerton's character, Richard, along with Charles Theron's character, Elaine, who plays kind of his... secretary?
Actually, no. She's part of business.
Business.
Because there's also a different character that's for a sec... Well, then again, that other girl was a receptionist. But that's beside the point.
But, yeah. Harold is married to Thondi Newton's character, which her name is Bonnie. And let's just say things get a little mixed up.
It has a lot of point of views from multiple characters instead of focusing on one. So, which makes the movie a slightly confusing, difficult, a bit difficult to,
unravel,
comprehend.
Yeah.
But...
we're struggling with the synopsis. This is probably indicating of the movie.
Anyway, Edgerton's character, his company had to do with medical marijuana, which had a base in Mexico.
Yeah, Mexico.
And then they're going under a merge process, and then that would cost Harold his job. And secretly, his wife is leaving him because she was having an affair with... well, I'm not going to say who it is, because that would be an ultimate spoiler.
The more important point of view is, meanwhile, in Chicago... or not in Chicago, in like California or someplace.
Yes, two more characters are added to the scene. That's right, folks. More perspective, which means more to love.
Which this is a shock, but Amanda Seyfried, she plays this girl named Sunny, and she has relations with or works with Harry Treadway's character, Miles. They work at a guitar shop or whatever.
Yep.
But they have a plan. They have a plan to go to Mexico to get the same marijuana pills.
Yeah, but that's Miles' plan, because Sunny, no idea what he really is like.
She's tagging along, basically.
Yeah.
Sunny. Just a vacation for her.
Yeah.
But
yeah, she wanted to be an actual tourist, because this is like maybe the first and only opportunity that she'll have to go to Mexico. I mean, come on, when you go to Mexico, who would you want to be? The tourist Yes, definitely tourist.
So Harold goes
to Mexico, on a business trip with Elaine and Richard.
Right.
Unbeknownst to him, one of the employees that works in the plant that they are going to visit works for a underworld crime boss, the Black Panther. Please do not confuse that with Black Panther, the Marvel superhero.
Yeah.
Please. That is completely different.
So he, Harold slowly starts to deduce what's going on behind the scenes.
Yep.
Especially in regards to Richard's personality and his backstabbing personality.
And his true intentions.
Yeah. And that goes along with Charles Theron's character too.
Yep.
So he devises a plan to kind of get the money that he needs to live a content life.
Yeah, he tries to fake his own kidnapping and
in
ransom.
Mexico, yeah. So, Richard buys it?
Well, sort of. He doesn't give up the ransom money, but he does enlist his brother's assistance, who was an ex-mercenary, and played by...
Anyways.
Oh, come on. We gotta at least sign in on ADBM. It's Mitch. The character's name is Mitch.
Character's name is Mitch.
Yes.
Oh, there he is. Charlto Copley. You'd recognize him. He's been in Chappie, District 9.
Oh, he was in Hardcore Henry, too.
Hardcore Henry. I remember him from the A-Team. He's been in Free Fire, which is a good flick. So he's been in a lot of movies.
Oh, he's in Maleficent.
Yeah,
sweet.
A lot of movies.
What did he play?
Maleficent, Stefan.
He was Stefan?
Stefan.
Wow, I did not expect that. Right on for him.
So anyways, he plays kind of the hitman for Richard.
Yep.
And he's Richard's brother. He sends him down and...
to try and rescue Harold.
Yep. And Mitch has good intentions.
But he's kind of greedy because he wants the money.
Yeah, he still has that greediness ingrained like his brother.
But at least he has it for right purpose compared to Richard, who only cares about himself.
Yeah.
And Elaine, because they like to have sex with each other and hook up, especially in his office. Yeah, it's a big shocker there.
So anyways, all these kind of mingle together and coalesce at the end. And
aye, aye, aye.
Everyone basically has relations with each other
in one way or another.
Yeah, more ways than one. And it ends up just being your typical crime thriller where undercover boss gets his plans uncovered, squandered.
Especially because one of his employees is actually a double agent. He's working for
That was a cool
plot twist.
Plot twist, yeah.
Yes.
Other than that plot twist, I would say this is predictable.
It was expected.
Yeah, everything was pretty dry.
Yeah, very slow. But
I would say what made from the second act on, which I would mark it where we meet Mitch. He's a character we barely spend any time with, but he's the most impactful, I think.
Yep.
And his relationship with Harold.
Who changes his name to Harry.
Yeah. They kind of build up on the story, and they become the most interesting part of the story and make the whole movie for me.
Definitely for me.
So from that point on, I think maybe the screenwriters thought that was the most important or the most enthralling part.
Yeah.
Maybe in the back of their head, and they wanted to get there eventually, but they didn't know how to lead up to that point very well.
It took very long to get the best parts, because it kind of was very, very slow to me.
And the pacing, it made the pacing all screwed up, because it didn't really have any momentum until we got to Mitch.
It made my mind jumbled up.
Yeah, which is weird, because we spent so long in the beginning, but it didn't feel like we had an exposition at all.
Yeah, including a little small flashback, which led up to the main point of the movie.
Mm-hmm. So, So you want to just run down the generic, like, critiques or whatever? So
acting.
What do we think of the acting?
Well, I definitely loved Harold's character specifically, mm-hmm. because, you know, he's like the central character. He had a lot of character development, because from being a loyal employee to realize mm-hmm. he's being backstabbed, mm-hmm. not only by his wife, but also by his boss.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he becomes his own person. And mm-hmm. then, you know, he has a lot more independence. You get to see a lot more personality coming from him, actually. Especially when he's drunk, by the way. You'll have to watch and find out. Wink, wink. Anyway, now for Mitch. Mitch is... Actually, no. Is that Mitch?
Yeah, it's Mitch.
Mitch, the brother. Yes. He's awesome. I definitely love the way his character pulls out, because, you know, he was a mercenary. He decided to go away from that life only then to, you know, wind up being in the job again. Just like Gone in 60 Seconds, in a way.
Yeah, he became like a missionary in Haiti or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, he, you know, brings supplies and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we said earlier, whenever Mitch met Harold, that was the most entertaining part. And it really fleshed out both of their characters simultaneously, like it should in any story. But
I think those two would have been great friends.
I would like to see a buddy cop or buddy anything movie with them.
Oh yeah, good cop, bad cop, because their synergy was beautiful together.
Yeah, it really was. Even though their lines were kind of generic, I thought like their just energy that they brought to the screen was really cool.
Yeah. Now what about Joel's character, Richard? What do you want to talk about that guy?
I think they gave him a pretty generic character to work with in the first place.
Yeah.
And he played it pretty on the nose. And definitely. I didn't like that. Like, it was too stale to me. I don't know.
Well, how would you define it as being stale for you?
Because he played it by the numbers. Like, he played it how we would play it. Like, how we would play a jerk. Right?
Oh, like a fox. I described his character as more as a Wily Fox type of character. He seems nice from, like, when you're around him, and then when you're not... He becomes a real schemer.
Mm-hmm. He puts on a ruse or whatever.
Yes.
But I don't know. I guess there's not much other ways of portraying a character like that. Mm. But I wish he would have gotten a more unique or deep role, which I don't think any character in here is pretty deep.
There are different levels for Joel's character, especially when, even though that he backstabs Harold, but he still cares about him, because he's trying to find ways if there was a way to get him out of his kidnapping attempt. So he gotta mm-hmm. give him some points. But then when there's something else happens, and his personality and character makes a total 360, or perhaps maybe a 180,
mm-hmm.
that's when you'll realize how much of a big jerk he is, because, you know, all he cares about is money. He doesn't really care about lives of others, or, you know, any type of relationship. Now, what about Elaine?
Charles Theron's character?
Yep, Charles Theron.
I almost wanted her to, like, do, like, at least one action scene, because I'm so used to her doing action stuff now with Mad Max and that spy movie she was in earlier.
Yeah.
2017. That was Atomic Blonde.
Oh, I haven't seen Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, she was brilliant in that. Yeah, it's basically Jason Bourne, but as a female Jason Bourne.
Nice.
But,
well, it's kind of like Red Sparrow is kind of like that, too. You should watch Red Sparrow, and anyone else should probably watch Red Sparrow.
I heard that's the female, like, or like a hardcore, what's the Avengers? Black Widow.
Jinx. Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, actually, yeah, she is kind of like younger version of Black Widow. Jennifer Lawrence did an exceptionally good job as the main character for Red Sparrow. Mm. She was independent. She was strong. She's not the type of person to break so easily.
Right. Anyways, in regards to, like, Charles Theron in this movie, I think she played it by the numbers too, but I think she played it well as you could do. She plays the backstabbing, similar personality to Richard in this. They're both basically the same character.
Yeah.
I have some gripe with that, but I don't know.
But think of it this way. Elaine got away with what she wanted to do in the end.
Right.
So
Richard, spoilers.
Not so much.
But I really thought the best part of the movie still is David Oyelowo. David O. We said we would name him. Yeah, he plays Harold. I still think his ability to hit the comedic beats.
Yes.
Was the best part.
Especially when he's drunk.
Yeah, I think that's. It gets even better whenever he meets Mitch, and he has a great sense of comedy too. He's done it in A-Team. He plays that a similar character in A-Team as well.
Okay, what about Sonny and Miles, the two guys from group from California going into Mexico?
I thought Amanda Seyfried did an okay job, and I thought I felt more attached to her than her boyfriend-esque character, Miles.
Yeah.
But I didn't think she had enough time on screen.
Nope, she didn't. I bet probably if there was a DVD, there would be deleted scenes. Like, you know, I don't want to give out examples without doing spoilers.
Let's just go into spoilers.
Okay, fine.
We already gave like two.
That's okay. In the end, Miles gets arrested because he was trying to smuggle out some medical marijuana that Richard's company the lab in Mexico was making. And somehow, and then of course Sonny was on the bus. I mean, who knew that Miles would have all that stuff on him? Either the guy that's supplying him back stabbed him in the back, or perhaps Sonny did. So maybe in the deleted scene in the DVD, she would probably call the police about it.
Right. But I felt that every character didn't really have a sense of individuality. Like the only person who they really cared about, which you should, the main character Harold, but it seemed like everyone was kind of like to build Harold in a way. Yeah. And I almost want everyone to have their own sense of purpose by themselves, you know?
Yeah.
But even if it's kind of mixed in that way too, because I feel like every character was there to build him. But then again, the pacing was so choppy and we didn't really have a sense of focus on Harold throughout the story, just with the characters around him.
Yeah, it got me all bounced around, going from person to person.
And then in regards to Sunny, right when we get attached to her,
she disappears. Yeah, she shows up towards the end.
Yeah, for like 30 or 40 minutes. Like, where's Sunny? What's she doing?
I know.
They tell her to just stay here
in the hotel room. Yeah.
We expect.
Maybe that's how she called the cops. Maybe she did it there.
Yeah, but that's just riding on assumption.
True. But then again, they could be on a deleted scene if there was ever a DVD for it. Now, what else do we want to talk about?
Any other characters?
The Hotel Brothers and the Black Panther crime boss.
Did you think they were necessary?
The brothers? The brothers, no. The crime boss, I don't know.
Like, I feel like you could cut out some stuff. Some stuff, like, the brothers, I feel like maybe they're gratuitous, maybe. I think the Black Panther guy, he was important, that plot line. Yes. I think it was ended up being a cool thing, even though we've seen it a million times in movies. But they had the sense of momentum down, like, more, it was way better than the sense of momentum in the beginning. So that made it feel a lot stronger than it should have.
So, but very true.
There's a lot of minor characters that are really famous, like Alan Ruck.
Oh yeah, didn't he play the double agent? Oh wait, no,
that's what I remember him from. He's from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I haven't really seen much of Ferris Bueller.
He plays the friend that's kind of like, he's kind of lame in Ferris Bueller.
Oh.
But yeah, that's kind of crazy. And he was in Twister and Speed.
I've seen Twister. Yeah, because that's a tornado movie, right?
But most people remember him from Ferris Bueller. Loud House.
Yes, the cartoon.
Oh. But it's just crazy. Like, things just, like, I didn't expect Charlize Theron to be in this, or anyone really. Anyone more famous than Joel Edgerton. But, I don't think anyone really cared, to be honest, though.
No.
And I think that was the general gist. Besides David O, I thought he gave it his all.
What other movies did he play in for David?
Let's check. He was in Selma.
Nope.
He's known for Selma.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Nightingale, Queen of Katwa. Not much.
The Lion Guard. Nice.
He was in the new Cloverfield Paradox movie that came launched on Netflix.
Oh, I saw Cloverfield Paradox.
Did you recognize him?
Actually, wait, what did he play as?
Kyle? Kyle?
Yes, I remember him.
Okay. So, I mean, but that, I didn't see it because it was kind of tossed on Netflix and
yeah.
The studio is kind of...
Oh, he's in A Wrinkle in Time, too.
Yep. He was in Star Wars Rebels?
Really?
Okay, so he's done some stuff, but it's been all over the map, and I thought he gave probably the best performance in this, as you should have the main character doing.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the score? I thought it got more focused and more in tune with the plot and momentum at the end.
In all honesty, I didn't really pay much attention to the score.
But I didn't really pay attention to it, but I just thought it was it found itself at the end.
Yeah.
It didn't really have anything special with it, though.
Nope.
So we got acting, score, direction was pretty boring. Nothing unique.
Yeah, just slightly.
It was shot almost like a commercial movie. Like, I think at a certain point we said it felt like a TV movie.
Yep.
I think that could be mixed with the writing as well, because it was jumbled, and most TV movies are jumbled and generic. Yeah.
Now for the grade. Because according to IDBM, they gave it a 5.7. But should we get around the same grade or something lower or maybe a slightly higher?
I'm struggling really hard because the beginning was so stale and mundane that...
Yep. Made it forgettable.
Yeah, you can't just make a... You can't execute, like, a very generic plot ending really well and expect me to go, oh, it's a perfect movie.
And then, hour into, it changes almost.
Yeah, it does feel like two movies in one.
Maybe, like, a part one or part two are soap opera on TV.
Yeah, it's all over the place. So, if you're asking me to rank the two halves, I would say the first half is like a 4. The second half is like a 6.2 or something, maybe a 7.
Yeah.
But together, what's the average of those two numbers?
Hold on, so you're making me do math now. So you said 4 and a 6 or a 7, so that's 11, so half of that is like maybe a 5.2?
I think that's fair. What would you rate it?
I would at least give that a 5.2 or 5.1.
Mm.
Mostly because it took forever to get any good stuff.
Yeah.
Like the good car chase scene and the big flip in the car when Harold got kidnapped first time.
It's being advertised as an action movie, so you would expect something.
I expect action throughout.
Yeah.
And comedy? Come on.
Maybe two action set pieces?
Well, they focus on the crime part.
The crime?
Yep.
If they're calling it, it almost feels like it wants to be a thriller.
But
it
it's wants trying to
be a lot
too
of,
hard.
Yeah, it wants to be a lot of things. But the thriller aspect, if you want to be a thriller, like, you need to really dig deep in these characters and, like, spend time with them in the beginning. In the right way.
Instead of showing one little scene and then a flashback leading up to the beginning scene and then, boom, main story.
Yeah, I was confused at who's the main character in the beginning.
Yeah. I thought Joel's character would have been the main character.
That would have been interesting, but...
But not so much. It was David's character that was the main star.
So, yeah, this felt like 10 movies, but
The
one with Mitch and Harold seems to be our favorite.
Yes. Just focus only on the Harold and the Mitch scenes, please.
I think that's it.
Yeah. I think that's good enough for me, if it's good enough for you.
Yeah, that was a solid one. It's kind of all over the place, but...
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, because I suggested it, because, you know, all the other movies that we originally wanted to thing about seeing, they weren't, you know, showing available tummy. Not to mention, we were thinking about doing a Peter Rabbit, but it was probably starting by the time we got in, so... But then again, they could have been going with the previews.
So does Hollywood have a unoriginality problem?
Maybe. You know, when I look at the movie title, it looks like a Sims title box or title illustration.
You know what? It kind of does.
So in other words, Sims gone bad.
Sims gone bad.
Yeah, let's just call it Sims gone bad. Believe me, if you understand the poster of the movie, you will understand.
That's a weird Sims game.
What? Sims is awesome.
I know, I love it, but it's just, whenever you sit back in retrospect, you're like, I was just doing chores for a bunch of, like, fictitious people. Like, they're like, I was just playing around and doing, like, dishes and, like, oh, what if I, like, put a fire on this person?
You should have, like, when I was playing my Sims game for a PS3 that I got, my sofa was stolen. Someone stole a big sofa.
It's so random.
Like, I know.
Someone could have like a whole life on Sims and like just be a homo or not a homeless person like in reality and just be okay.
Yeah.
You get so sucked into it.
I know.
That and remember like Roller Coaster Tycoon?
No, but I have played Thrillville, if that counts. Because you get to, it takes place in an amusement park and you're building roller coasters and you're trying to get all the players, other people that appear in the park happy.
Yeah.
All that. That's what I played, like, before.
Do you think this should have been rated R?
Well, no, not really. I mean, sure, they showed the sex scenes between Edward...
It wasn't graphic at all.
No, it wasn't.
It was kind of...
If you saw Red Sparrow, that will deserve a rated R movie.
Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it has clothes, some people take their clothes off.
Anyways, do you want to do at least one half of the party on Book Wars?
Oh, yeah. We could if you want.
Okay. Do you want to just introduce your book?
Well, I don't physically have it on me, but I can pretty
just
much...
talk about it.
Okay. All right, you want to start?
That sounded forceful. No, you go.
Okay, because eventually we're just going to go back and forth, saying, you go first.
What do you
want
to do?
Okay.
It's like that Jungle Book scene.
All right, you introduce it, then I will talk about the book or series.
Introduce my book?
No, you talk about introducing the Book Wars, and then I'll introduce my book.
Okay. I thought we introduced it last time.
Oh, yeah, we did. Oh, well.
We can always change, like, the concept of it. But we just want to talk about books.
Yay, books!
Basically. And, yeah. And just, like, our passion or feelings towards it and what we got from it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the segment. I'm pretty sure, like, there's 1,000, like, podcasts on just books. But we're the Whatever This Is podcast. So, we're just going to do whatever.
That's hence the title of the podcast.
Yeah. So... Originally, this was going to be titled Book Wars, but this can be whatever.
Yeah, we could.
So, after you.
Okay. All right. So, my book, well, it's technically a book series. I love to death. I've been reading it forever. I have all the books leading up to a brand new series, which is by the same author. The title is I Am Number 4, which is a young adult science fiction novel by Pittacus Lore, which is a pseudonym or a false name by, and the real author's name is James Frey. You would also know him from the Endgame series, which he wrote after the I Am Number 4 series. Anyway, it's all about a bunch of 9 kids that arrive on Earth from an alien planet. They're supposed to have unique abilities, but their home planet was destroyed by an invading other alien species, and they're following them to Earth in order to hunt them down and kill them. But the only thing is, they're only allowed to be killed if they were killed in numerical order from 1 to 9. The first 3 have been killed, hence I Am Number 4, which is the main character, 4, or John, and it all centers around him because he's trying to get his powers running, or he's getting into his powers because he's 16 years old. They usually start gaining their powers in around 13 to 14 years old. And all of the pairs, the kids and their guardians, they have to hide on Earth. And they're supposed to stay away, separate from each other, because there's like a charm that protects them. Which, of course, the charm is, you know, you have to kill them in numerical order from 1 to 9. And eventually, he and his guardian Henri, or Henry, that's what I call him anyway, they settled in Paradise, Ohio. And then, of course, John is introduced to being thrust into regular high school life. He meets a girl, Sarah, that he falls for. He has a best friend, geeky guy named Sam. And, of course, there's a couple of bullies here and there. And then eventually, you know, he gets into his powers. The main power that everybody has is telekinesis. That is the first power, or legacies, that they're, as they're called, before eventually discovering other powers. Telekinesis is the very first legacy. Also, the guard, aka the nine kids, or should I say six, because, you know, they're three are dead. Those are the very first stepping stones of gaining their powers, because each of them has unique powers that are different from each other. So, it's a very good series, because you get to have perspective and point of views from multiple characters. Of course, the first book is with John, obviously. And then in the next book, you get to get perspective from a few other members of the guard. You know, those are the kids. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get some other narrations, too. So...
That was a film, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it is, actually, yeah.
How does it compare?
Read the book. Please read the book.
So, like, what is the most entertaining part of the book? What would draw most general audiences, you think?
The fight scenes are awesome. Really? You get to actually read the descriptions of what's going on. You get to see all the different legacies that each child has. Mm-hmm. You get to see a lot of character development, different points of view. You even get to have a point of view from one of the aliens of one person from the alien race that's trying to kill them, but he turned good. Because, well, this is going to be a bit of a spoiler, because he's introduced in the fifth book. Yeah, because there are seven main books, like the Harry Potter's series, so he's introduced towards the end of the fifth book. But they're also, like, mini-books that have events that led up to the main series.
Ooh, so, like, prequels.
Yes! Anyway, like, the Mogadorian, which is the alien race that's hunting down the kids, his name is Adam. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit older than most of the other kids. He was there when the murders of 1, 2, and 3, the first three kids that were killed. When the number one was killed, she was a young girl. She was around 14 years old. When they killed her, they took her body and put it into some type of machine so Adam can get into her memories, so get all the information that they need in order to get the guard, you know, to know what the other identities of the other kids are. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, one was in control of Adam, of what memories Adam gets to see, and she takes him through her life from her arrival on Earth and leading up to her death. And she was killed in Malaysia, in case you were wondering, because in the jacket sleeves of the books, they tell you where they were killed. One was killed in Malaysia, two in London, three in Kenya. So, after seeing all the memories and seeing one's life in person, Adam has a change of heart, and he actually falls for her. And then after the surgery, or after getting inside her memories, or getting out, it was 3 years later. So he was 13 when he dived on into the memories. She was 14 when she died, and now he's 16 after going through the memory tour. And then, of course, there's a ghost form of one, you know, the same person that gave him the private tour of her memories. And she convinces him to try and get 2 and 3 out of, you know, harm's way. He came close to saving them both, but they end up dead anyway, so that's kind of sad.
So, with all this, like, abundant, like, characters and maybe themes going on, is there anything or anyone getting, like, shorthanded?
What do you mean?
Like, not... Is there a certain character that's only getting a certain amount of time with you, or a certain perspective or plot point that you're like, oh, I wish there was more there?
Well, to be honest, there was one guard in particular that I really liked. The only problem is she died. Mm-hmm. And that was number two. She was the youngest to die. She was 12. Mm-hmm. And she loves literature. She loves books. Mm-hmm. So pretty much she had a lot of different books on her disposal. Like, one of them was George Orwell's 1984, for example. She was, of course, she was the youngest when she died, but if she lived, she would be around Four's age because they were both born, around the same year, but different months. She had red hair, glasses. She was very small for her age. And she didn't have any legacies either. All she had was that little handgun and her, Seipan, which his name is the Guardian. His name was Comrade, and he was like awesome. Red hair, had a lot of big machine guns, armed to the teeth. Yeah, I really liked Maggie. That's the alias that two had. You never actually know some of the aliases for one, though, which was sad. But anyway, Maggie was someone I actually liked, even though I only read a little bit from her mini, like the mini book. But she was a character that I could relate to, but I also relate to Adam, who was the Mogadorian, you know, the alien race that's trying to kill them. I can relate to him too, because he's doing, because originally he was on a path that all the people on his race were following, you know, kill the guard and take over the earth, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then after being one, he diverged from that path and went on to retribution in a way. So I kind of coexist with both of them.
So, what is the most, we talked about the most entertaining part. Is there anything, like, really interesting or resonant with you, personally?
Resonating with me, huh?
Yeah.
I guess.
Any theme that really hit you?
I'm not sure. I mean, there are different themes in each book. But I guess finding who you are, mostly self-discovery.
Okay. I think or less. That's a ubiquitous theme amongst like young adult novels, finding yourself and escaping whatever trial you have. I haven't actually read the Maze Runner books, but
I have.
Yeah,
first one.
It seems like that's a theme in there too, right? Yeah. Like escaping trial and finding yourself.
Yeah, but also. For I Am Number Four is like putting other people before yourself too, but then again, that's practically almost every other theme of a lot of books. Let's see what other themes. I guess being true to yourself more likely, and you don't change for anyone else except for yourself, or fully acknowledge of who you are on the inside and out. And of course, there's always teamwork, family, friends. You know, major role, morale, and stuff that everyone should know, so.
So, is this more sci-fi? What is the genre?
Sci-fi? It's young adult sci-fi.
Okay.
Mostly because of the unique legacies and powers. They get very descriptive on, like, the alien creatures that come and the battle with the guard and against them. They're very descriptive and illustrative with the fight scenes. Mm-hmm. They talk about places around the world that you don't even think of knowing. Like parts of the country, parts of the world that you don't even know existed.
Hmm.
I know, right? And also,
you said this is like it jumps around like locations, like around the globe. You said, or is it more?
Like for example, one of the guard members, she's number six. She actually tries to go and find number four after she finds out that three is killed, because whenever each member of the guard dies, you know, one of the nine, they get a scar on their ankles depicting which guard dies, because that's part of the charm, Lorik charm. So they have one ankle has the Lorik charm of what their number is, and then on their right ankle represents the guard that die. So the minute that three's scar appears on her ankle, six tries to find four, which she does, spoiler. And that means the Lorik charm protecting the others is broken. And six is practically the guard that brings all the others together. Ironically, because four is the leader of the group. Interesting, isn't it?
Is there a book that's like analogous or some book that you can say like, oh, this is similar for anyone, like a general audience out there that like, oh, should I get this book?
That's a good question.
Yeah, who would you recommend this to?
You mean recommend the series as a whole?
I guess this is a two-part question. Like, is there a book that's similar to it? And who would you recommend it to?
Well, that's... To be honest, I don't know if there are any books that kind of coexist with that, to be honest. But I would recommend it to anybody that loves sci-fi in particular, that wants to get... get into science fiction novels, even starting as a from a young adult science fiction series. Final Number of Horror is really good.
Mm-hmm.
They had good ratings, or I believe, in reviews.
So generally, like, young adult and science fiction people are going to be into this.
I think so. Or anybody, for that matter. Anybody. Yeah.
It seems like it hits broad strokes, like, thematically, so, like, anybody be, like, it would resonate with them, it seems like. So, that's cool.
All right, now for your corner.
My corner?
Yeah.
I was planning on just doing a one-half party on this, but I guess I could... I didn't really have a book prepared this week, but I could... bring to the table and we talked about this earlier, but I was gonna say Answer to Job. It's a book written by Carl Jung. He's a psychoanalyst, kind of criticized among the psychology people. They didn't like his radical ideas. He was very spiritual. And he looked towards biblical stories on numerous occasions to find morals that and ethical lessons that could help his patients. And he thinks there's a lot to learn from the Bible in terms of the whole mankind and how we've grown. So he looked towards, in this Answer to Job, towards the biblical story Job. In which Job gets thrown with tons of trials by God, in which God gets asked by the devil, like, do you have any person that you can give me? And God's like, what about my most noble person in the world? Which Carl Jung starts to question, why would he even do that? So it kind of goes down the rabbit hole of why and how he would mess with his own people. He's kind of got this dualistic character behind the scenes, and it kind of seems like he's throwing too much at his own people, and he forgets about his omniscience and how he has the capability of conjuring up more capable people if he wanted to. But in the end, there's two lessons. One, it's sort of what we learned in the novel The Alchemist, in which the thing you most want to find in life is in the place you least want to look. And two, a conclusion Carl Jung vaguely kind of concludes is that God is throwing all these trials and tribulations at Job, his most loyal person, because he himself wants to be just a normal human. So that was, I thought, a unique take. So yeah, if anyone wants to look at the philosophical side of the Bible or and the psychology of religion, I think it's a cool take on it. So yeah, that was a breathful I think that's it for our book discussion.
Yep.
And movie review.
Oh yes.
What else do you want to talk about, or is that it?
Let's see, we both talked about the books. We talked about the movies.
Yeah.
Did I make a convincing argument that you may want to read him?
Yeah, I think it's I've seen the films, and it seems like a perfectly good tale to jump into. And you made a convincing argument as to why the books would be a more thorough narrative to enjoy.
Just let me know when you need one to borrow them, because I have them with me at my apartment.
I always find it cool... when authors like go more introspective, and it's hard to do because you can just lose yourself in the thoughts of the character and not really progress in the story. But is there any point in Iron Number 4 where it really goes in depth in the characters' thoughts?
Well, I think it does that for all of them.
Okay, so they all feel like grounded characters, you think?
Yeah. Okay. Although there are a few characters that don't have narrations, but they are still central to the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
Like a few of, like, one character, he doesn't show up till at least the fifth book. Yeah, fifth book. And he doesn't get a narration, but he gets narration in the next, in a mini series after that comes in between the fifth and the sixth book. And then, of course, there are more in-depth characters because, you know, like, for example, Adam, he's mostly a mini-novel character, but then eventually he does become a central character in the real, in the main books.
That's
if
cool.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's cool. Is that the only book series that author has done?
No.
No?
Pittacus, Laura, James Frey did the Endgame series, and I have those two.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's really good.
So he must be, he must have something going on to.
Mm-hmm. They're thinking about making an Endgame movie, actually.
I thought they already did.
Don't think they have. There are theories about it. And of course, they thought about doing a next I Am Number 4 movie, but it's been shelved. The idea's been shelved. Kind of sad, really.
I thought they already did. No. What did you just say?
I Am Number 4. Movie? They were going to make a sequel
to it. Oh, okay.
But that has been shelved. They never made an Endgame series, but they're saying that they are, and that Fox has the okay on it.
I found this Endgame movie.
Well, that isn't Endgame.
Yeah, that is not Endgame.
Nope.
What am I thinking of? Something game.
Ender's Game.
Ender's Game, right.
I have that movie.
Yeah.
But that's good.
Okay. That was...
Oh, did we stop it already?
No, I was just looking at the movies. I think we've gone on quite long enough.
I think this one's one of the longest ones, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it competes with the Black Panther discussion.
Oh, yes, because we had another person, Anthony, in it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think it was pretty fun, thorough.
Yeah. We should do more book wars more often.
Yeah, I think it's fun. Anything else we missed? I think we...
I don't think so. I don't think so.
How's the weather? Pretty good?
Yeah, the big B-Day tomorrow, turning 24. Oh, expecting rain. I'm looking forward to that. And we're springing our clocks forward on the night of the 10th, people. So, in case you have clocks, make sure you spring them forward. Daylight savings time. Pick the wrong timing for it.
Yeah, it does suck, doesn't it?
Yes. On my birthday, too.
Why do we do that?
I don't know.
Spring forward?
And then fall back? To be honest, I really would prefer to just say fall back.
Fall back. So yeah. we lose an hour?
Yeah, we lose an hour of sleep tomorrow night, yeah. I know, right?
Right when the weather's warming up?
You're kidding me, right? They're expecting snow Sunday night.
Yeah, generally it's warming. It's up on the upward trend.
Yeah. But still, daylight savings time.
Okay, now we're talking about weather, so that means we're really done.
Yeah, so we're talking about weather. That means we're really done with no other topics.
Okay, so peace, and we'll see you...
some other time.
Yep.
Maybe next week. Who knows? Do not quote me.
All right. See ya.
Bye.